Are you there with me? Acts chapter 23. If you haven't, say, I got it. St. John Baptist Church. Faith with living. I'm reading from the English Standard Version. And looking intently at the council, Paul said, brothers, I have lived my life before God in all good conscience up to this day. And the high priest Ananias commanded those who stood by him to strike him on the mouth. Then Paul said to him, Paul looked like he went ghetto here. God is going to strike you, you whitewashed wall. I guess that was first century cussing. Are you sitting to judge me according to the law? And yet contrary to the law, you order me to be struck. Those who stood by Paul, would you revile God's high priest? And Paul said, oh, I did not know, brothers, that he was the high priest. For it is written, you should not speak evil of a ruler of your people. Now, when Paul perceived that one part were Sadducees and the other Pharisees, he cried out in the council, brothers, I am a Pharisee, son of Pharisees. It is with respect to the hope and resurrection of the dead that I am on trial. And when he had said this, a dissension arose between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the assembly was divided. For the Sadducees say that there is no resurrection, not angel nor spirit, but the Pharisees acknowledged them all. But then a great clamor arose, and some of the scribes of the Pharisees' party stood up and contended sharply, we find nothing wrong in this man. What if a spirit or an angel spoke to him? And when the dissension became violent, the tribune, afraid that Paul would be torn to pieces by them, commanded the soldiers, these are Roman soldiers, to go down and take him away, that's arrest him, from among them by force and bring him into the barracks that would be jail. Verse 11, the following night, the Lord stood by him and said, take courage, for as you have testified to the facts about me in Jerusalem, so you must testify also in Rome. Look at verse 12. When it was day, the Jews made a plot and bound themselves by an oath neither to eat nor drink till they had killed Paul. There were more than 40 who made this conspiracy. I want to talk for a little while from this topic. I'm in protective custody. I'm in protective custody. I need you to watch me on the screen because I got something there to roll out. I'm in protective custody. Look at the person next to you and say, neighbor, I'm in protective custody. This is what I want to say this morning. I want to say this. The purpose of God always overrules the plans of man. The purpose of God always overrules the plans of man. Matter of fact, I want you to just hone in on just verse 11. You had that there. See that in verse 11, and I want you to compare it to verse 12 and 13. I want you to make this comparison. Verse 11 and then verse 12 and 13. Now, in order to appreciate what's going on, you have to read what's before what we read in 22 and then on. We're not going to read all that, so when you get a chance, read it. But look at verses 23, 11, and then I want you to compare it to verses 12 and 13. There is a perspective from above, verse 11, and then there is a perspective from below, verses 12 and 13. There is a perspective from God, divine perspective, in verse 11, and there is a human perspective in verses 12 and 13. In verse 11, you have the purpose of God. In verses 12 and 13, you have the plans of man. I want you to compare that because this speaks to us this morning, what I want to tell you about the purposes of God overrule the plans of man. That's where I'm getting that from. If you notice in verse 11, you have the Lord coming to Paul in the jail, stood by him, the text says, and says, look, you take courage. And having testified of the facts about me in Jerusalem, just like I had you as my agent, as my missionary, as my voice here in Jerusalem, you're also going to go to Rome. Please understand that Paul everybody has abandoned him, and we'll kind of enter into a situation in a minute, but just understand that he probably is discouraged. That's why God needs to come to him and say, take courage, because he's not at his best. And look, he's at his lowest moment. And at his lowest moment, God comes to him and says, look, in essence, I'm going to complete what I started in you. You're going to get to Rome. Don't focus on what's going on around you, because you are not going to check out of here until you have accomplished my purpose. Then right after that, after God speaks to him, you have a message from above. Right after that, it's juxtaposed. Back to back is juxtaposed. Back to back, God's perspective juxtaposed with man's perspective. And right after that, you see the plans of man, and they were plotting to kill Paul. Now, you have to appreciate the plot to kill Paul upon the backdrop of what God, Jesus, just said to Paul. Look here, I got a purpose for you, and that purpose means that I'm going to get you to Rome, and you're going to carry out my gospel to the farthest places of the earth. And then, so in order to appreciate what they're doing, you got the plans of man. We're going to knock him out. We're going to take him out. But the plans of man need to be viewed in light of the purposes of God. What am I trying to tell you? What he's telling Paul is this, man, they can do whatever they want to do. They can plot whatever they want to plot. But here at the end of the day, my purpose is always overrule the plans of man. You're not going to check out of here until I get out of you what I put in you. Let me say that again. You're not going to check out of here until I get out of you what I put in you. If you have accepted Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior, let me just go on and give you the headline. You are in a witness protection program. I know. I understand. You just thought you just waiting on heaven. You need to have a conversation. If you believe this, all you waiting for, have a conversation with Tim Fuller about 5 minutes after church. And he'll tell you it's a whole lot more than just heaven. He got you here. Matter of fact, when you accepted Jesus Christ, we've been down this road before, but let me ask again. The deal was, as far as we were concerned, if you believe on Jesus Christ, you're going to heaven. That's what we believe. And that's the truth. But the question becomes, when you accepted Jesus Christ, why didn't he take you then? If that's the deal, accept Jesus Christ, go to heaven, then why are you still stuck here on earth going through this hell that you're going through when the promise was, I believe, why didn't he zap you then? Ask me, just say why. I'll tell you why. It's because he got some work for you to do down here. You are a witness for him. That is, he has saved you and said, what I have done for you, this gospel. Remember, we talked last week about the darkness to light. All of us have had that Damascus Road experience where God opened up the light and opened up your eyes and let you see who he was. You received the gospel. You were saved by grace through faith. You accepted Jesus. You see Jesus now through new lenses. He is your Savior. He is your Lord. He is your King. He is not a criminal. He is not cursed. He is Christ who reigns forever. And if you're saved this morning, you ought to be able to say amen, because that's what you believe, out of darkness into light. And he said, yeah, good, Sean. Now that you understand what I've done for you, I'm going to leave you down here for a little while so you can pass it on, just like somebody passed it on to you. Huh? I said, like somebody, really?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Are you saying? I said somebody passed it on to you. And just like somebody passed it on to you, he's saying, I'm going to leave you here to pass it on to somebody else. So I'm in a witness protection program. That is, God has some people in my life. God has some people in your life that he has destined, got lined up for you to be a witness of who he is. I wish I had a witness. And you ain't going to check out of here until God gets out of you what he puts in you. Please understand, when I say I'm in protective custody, I am not saying that you can't die. Paul is dead now. Paul got killed. Matter of fact, even Jesus got killed. So protective custody don't mean nothing bad can happen to you. It don't mean you can't die. What it means is, whatever comes, as we're going to see in this text, whatever comes against you to block you from accomplishing your purpose, God has his arms around you. I wish I had a witness in here. And you are under his protection in order to carry out his purpose. No. Somebody needs some coffee. I said, you are under his protection in order to carry out his purpose. no, no, y'all ain't feeling this like I really need y'all to feel this. Because, see, we like the first part, I'm under his protection. But, see, please understand that the protection is connected to the purpose. Did you hear what I said? He telling Paul, he said, I got you, don't take courage. Why? Because that's protection. Then he says, why? Because I got you going to Rome. That's purpose. So I'm holding you out, not so you just stay alive, not just so you can hang around, not so you can just be in survival mode, but I'm keeping you here under protection so that you can accomplish your purpose. So God's got you here as long as he has you here until he gets out of you what he puts in you. Y'all all right this morning? Uh-huh. All right. So now let me run down real quick. You ready? Let me run this down, verses 1 through 10. The precipitating factors that lead to this situation got Paul to jail, and I want to show you something. We get out of here. One, here's the rundown. I ain't going to preach all this, but I just want you to see it. Verses 1 through 10, you have the reputation of Paul. All right. This is Paul in court. By the way, let me set this thing up. All right. This is within the scope of chapter 22 to 26, there are at least 5 defenses that Paul gives. Let me say that again. Within the scope of chapter 22 to 26, there are at least none less than 5 defenses that Paul gives for his ministry. This is number 2. Last week we dealt with number 1. This is number 2. This is the second defense that Paul gives in public. And the last defense he's going to give in Jerusalem. And now he's here, and they're asking him, they're saying he's standing before the Sanhedrin Council, all right? That's the Supreme Court of the Jews. These religious leaders connected with Pharisees and Sadducees. That represents the highest ranking leaders as it relates to religion. These are your Reverend Elder, Doctor, Bishops, Apostles, and Popes. Who are all gathered. So if there's anybody who ought to be able, I'm setting you up, anybody who ought to be able to judge whether or not this stuff is real or right, it ought to be them. The reverend, the elder, the doctors, the preachers, the one who got their doctorate degrees from the mail and all that. Everybody who got anointed and somebody called them brother apostle. All of them are there. And if there's anybody who ought to be able to speak on religious issues, it ought to be these people. Did y'all get that? Tuck it in your pocket. We're going to come back to that. Now, so we here in the setting, this is his second defense, and they like, look, we need to find out what's going on with you. You're causing such commotion. You're causing such confusion everywhere you go in Jerusalem. So let's find out what's going on here. So as Paul speaks, verses 1 through 10, the defense goes like this. 1, the reputation of Paul. 2, there is the rebuke by the priest. 3, there is the resurrection of Jesus that is prioritized. And then there is the rescue by the police. Let me do this again. Now, some of y'all didn't say amen until I said rescue by the police. Like, yeah, that's my number right there. Yeah, I don't know about all this other stuff, but I've been rescued. Y'all ready? I know something about the police. The reputation of Paul, there is the rebuke by the priest, there's the resurrection as priority, and there is the rescue by the police. Now, notice what happens here. Number 1, Paul, verse 1, the reputation of Paul. Paul said, look, I can bear witness that everything I've been doing up to this point, I've done it in good conscience. Can I tell you what he's doing here? He's saying, I'm not an imitator. I'm not a faker. I'm not a fraud. I'm not a prosperity pimp. I'm not trying to take advantage of people and using the pulpit as a platform to gain possessions and power for my own gain. I'm not a crooked jackleg preacher. So I can tell you, I can stand here and tell you that what I'm doing here, I'm doing in good conscience. Even before I knew, I thought I was right, but then I found out I was wrong. But up to this point, I've been doing what I'm doing in good conscience. Big conscience. Then, not only is there the reputation of Paul, but then there is the rebuke by the priest. Now, you got to understand the text says Ananias. This is another Ananias. Now, what we know about this high priest is he's a political thug. Have you ever heard of such a thing? I just asked you, have you ever heard of such a thing? Let me do it again. Ananias, go and do your homework. Go back. So the master, go and look at your Josephus. What you'll find is he's a political thug. They ain't going to tell you like that. I'm going to bring it out like that. He's a political thug. Okay, so he bribes people. He strong-armed folk, you know, police brutality, getting stuff out of violence, paying for positions, all that kind of stuff. So he's a political thug. And when Paul says, everything I've been doing, as far as I'm concerned, have been in good conscience. As soon as he says that, the political thug, Ananias, points over to the guy closest to Paul and says, smack him. Now, please understand, the smack is kind of like, y'all seen a 70s pimp. I'm not smacking you to knock you out. I'm smacking you to put you in check. I go over here. I said, have you heard of a 70s pimp? I'm trying to, they always talk about the preacher need to make it relevant. I didn't want to give you too much Greek. 70s pimp. Backslap. I ain't trying to knock you out. I just want to put you in check. So the political thug sends out a pimp slap for Paul. And you got to excuse Paul because Paul get a little mad. And you can understand Paul because Paul a little bit like us. I mean, what you going to do? I mean, this is Paul's first reaction. Paul's first reaction is he said, "You may God strike you down. You whitewash wall and all that." Paul just started going out. And I know this is the one who wrote, bless those who curse you. I understand. But come on now. Sometimes my first reaction may not be my best reaction. I wish I had somebody here. You ever got somebody that just got you off the side? You didn't know it was coming and whatever came out your mouth. And later on you had to come back and say, oh, I'm sorry. Y'all, look at somebody say, give Paul a break. Give Paul a break. So he said, you whitewash wall. And really, from a theological perspective, he's right. Whitewash wall. The picture is, back then, if you had a wall that was damaged or a wall that was defiled or dirty and you wanted to cover it up, you covered up with whitewash. You painted, covered up with whitewash. So the idea is that which is on the inside is covered up by making it look pretty on the outside. So what he's saying to Ananias is, see, you got all of the accessories of religion. On the outside, you look like you legitimate, sitting all up here with religious leaders and all that, acting like you got something for the law. But if you really had something for the law, you wouldn't be smacking me before you even heard me out. So you a low down dirty dog on the inside, coming on the outside looking like you are. And then the guys turn around and say to Paul, they say, hey, you gonna talk like that to the high priest? And Paul said, I'm sorry, I didn't know he was the high priest. Now scholars, all these white scholars, all these folks want to argue about, you know, was Paul lying and going on. One argument is Paul's lying. The other argument is Paul didn't really, he was telling the truth. He really didn't know who the guy was. One reason is they say because it was an informal hearing, so he didn't have a dress thing on, so he didn't know who it was. And then the other one is, well, Paul knew, he didn't know because his eyesight was bad. And I put next to my commentary, yeah, right. The other view is that it's sarcasm. That is, Paul is saying, he smacked the Paul, said, oh, I didn't know that there was a high priest. The idea being, because see, if he was a high priest, I know he wouldn't have told nobody to smack me. He went Negro right there. You see, because I know you couldn't have been the high priest doing something like that. So I don't know where Paul landed, but what happens is Paul comes out of it and he does correct himself. He said, because the Bible does say, he said, the word says that you respect the leaders, don't revile the leaders. So leaders are deserving of respect. How about Donald Trump? See, y'all thought we were talking about Ananias and the political thugs in the first century. What about who we consider political thugs in the 21st century? Paul corrects himself and say, no, let me check. Because God said those who have been placed in authority, I'm supposed to give them respect. Not because they deserve it. Not because they treated me right. Not because I agree with their issues, their policies, or their thuggishness. Their thuggery. I don't agree with what they're doing, but they are. God is the one who placed them there. And by me respecting them, I'm making a statement that I trust God with them. See, I ain't got to go cussing you out and fussing at you if I know. See, the reason why I got to jack you up and cuss you out and all that kind of stuff and try to handle it myself in my way is because I feel like I'm the one that's in control. The thing depends upon me. But when I understand that God is in control, I can go ahead and go and respect you, respect the position, because I know God going to do one of two things. Either he going to change you, and you're going to change, or he's going to take you down the road and you're going to get what's coming to you. One way or the other, God can handle your enemies better than you can, so you can allow yourself. So God says, free yourself up. You ain't got to be responding to everything that come your way. You can allow yourself even to respect those who disrespect you, not because you some Uncle Tom, not because you bowing and kissing, and not because you some Southern Belle that's apologizing for existing. No, it's not that. You're not doing it. I can do it because I'm trusting God, and I know God can handle my enemies. And when I respect you, I'm making a statement that God is in control. Y'all hear what I'm trying to tell you? Stayed there a little bit longer than I want to, but I kind of felt that when y'all didn't get on board with Donald Trump, I had to explain myself. Watch your Facebook. Watch your Twitter. Watch all this stuff you putting out. It's not because the person doesn't deserve it. It's not because the person is not wrong. But please understand, when you sit out there, you're not just making a statement about whoever you're attacking. You're making a statement about your God. But if God is in control, I can respect you. I can pray for you. Matter of fact, the best thing you can do for anybody who's tripping is to pray for them, because if God gets a hold to them. By the way, don't get too high and mighty and get amnesia, because you know the same prayers that are needed for them, they need the same mercy that you need. The only difference between you and Donald Trump is he on CNN. Your stuff still covered up. But if they put your stuff on blast, people be putting you on Facebook too. I ain't even going to ask for a witness. Just going to roll your eye. The reputation of Paul, the rebuke by the priest, then the resurrection as priority. Paul says he sees an opportunity, and he says, what's going on is you got Sadducees, you got Pharisees. And what he does is he shifts the conversation. See, remember, they didn't bring him here on the charge, so to speak, that he disrupted the resurrection. They brought him up here because he disrupted the temple and all that. So everybody's confused about what's going on. Paul said, no, let me establish what the real thing is. He said, let me shift the conversation. And by Paul doing this, this is strategic, because for the rest of the defenses, the thing that's going to be on the top of the list, Jimmy, is the resurrection of Jesus Christ. He said, the reason why I'm up here, make no mistake about it, is because I am proclaiming that Jesus Christ rose from the dead. In essence, what he's saying is nothing, everything else is secondary. Yeah, you know, y'all lying on me and all that about the temple. Y'all got a problem with me going out to the Gentiles and all that. But see, let's put all that to the side, because see, here's the thing. Jesus rose. If Jesus did not rise from the dead, Paul is saying, I'm an imitator, I'm a fake, I'm a fraud, I'm a crook, I'm disturbing the peace, and y'all need to throw me away, throw away the key and lock me up. If Jesus didn't rise from the dead, I'm wrong. But if Jesus got up from the dead, that means that we have cursed our king, we have made a criminal out of Christ, and we have been on the wrong side of history, and we got to repent, turn, and believe on Jesus Christ. So let's forget everything else, because the number one thing is, did Jesus rise from the dead? Later on in 1 Corinthians, he's going to tell you this. He's going to say everything else don't matter. Number one, if Jesus Christ did not get up, our faith is in vain. Did you hear what I said? If Jesus did not get up, your faith is in vain. Everything hinges on that. You asking questions about your life, about is it worth it? You in a job, you in a family situation, you in whatever, you in friendship and whatnot, and you trying to invest and do what God has called you to do, integrate your faith with living, and you asking the question, is this stuff worth it? Let me help you out. You asking the wrong question. The question is, did Jesus rise from the dead? Because, see, if Jesus didn't get up, You are stuck. That whatever you're trying to do and however you're trying to live, all of it's a waste of time. It's going nowhere. It has no purpose. You have no hope. If Jesus didn't get up, you wasting your time. But if he got up, you can allow yourself to lose yourself, because everything you do, God ain't going to let nothing be wasted, because Jesus rose from the dead. I wish I had a witness in here. You wondering whether or not, let me just go and bring this home. You wondering whether or not you should forgive folk. And the reason why I don't want to forgive some folk is because I feel like they deserve it and whatnot. And you know what unforgiveness is? Unforgiveness is holding something over somebody's head because they owe you. Y'all with me? Like on a definition? Yeah. And I'm wondering, I'm asking the question, should I forgive him, her, them, whatever? And you're asking the wrong question. The question is, did Jesus rise from the dead? Because if Jesus just died for sin, but he didn't get up, that means that the Father didn't accept the payment and you still in your sin. And since you ain't been forgiven, ain't no reason for you to forgive nobody else. But if Jesus rose from the dead, that's a testimony that your sins have been taken away. The Father has accepted the sacrifice, and just like God has forgiven you, how you gonna receive it, but you ain't willing to dish it out? Y'all ain't hearing what I'm saying. Is it worth getting up on Sunday morning and coming to church and fellowshipping and investing in the body and learning about the word so you can live it out? You're asking the wrong question. The question is, did he get up early on Sunday morning? Are you just doing something as a ritual to make you feel good that has no reality behind it? Or are you doing this because there is a Jesus who died and rose again and never went back to the grave to give you hope, which makes this thing worth it? You're asking the wrong question. Paul said, let me switch the conversation, because all this little stuff you talking about, by the way, you talk about you set in your ways, and you wonder should you change about this little Jim Crow religion you got, where you got folks up here, down here. It could be, I said, up here, down here. You up here, they down here. You think you better than folk, and it's been working for you, haven't it? We gonna have church all by ourselves. Everybody else, they wanna be Baptist. We gonna be biblical this morning. And you wondering whether or not your problems with racism, not saying it is not there, but your problem with those of another race, of whether or not you should pursue relationships or not, because this is what I'm used to, this is what I come up with, and you asking the question, should you stick out there, should you change? You're asking the wrong question. The question is, did Jesus rise from the dead? Because if Jesus rose from the dead, that means that he created a new life, a new world, a new creation, a new perspective, and I'm not stuck with what mama taught me. I ain't stuck with what they did to me. I'm not stuck with my past, because Jesus said, because I rose from the dead, I'm giving you a new beginning, so you can't use your past as an excuse to be stuck where you are. You're asking the wrong question. Paul said, let me shift the conversation. Because whether or not I'm going to the Gentiles, whether or not what I'm doing in the temple, what I'm doing as it relates to forgiveness, how I'm relating to God, all of that depends upon whether or not he got up from the dead. Stayed there a little longer than what I wanted to. But you need to understand this besides, you know, Easter Sunday. You know, resurrection is something, we just kind of reduce it to the Sunday. And he got up from the dead. He rose. But then, the reputation of Paul, there is the rebuke by the priest. There is the resurrection as the priority. And then that separates everybody. They start fighting one another. The Sadducees don't believe in a resurrection. Pharisees do believe there's a possibility for a resurrection. They start fighting with one another. So now the court has been closed. And now they're pulling Paul one way or the other, about to tear him apart. And court is closed down. What happens? Paul has to be rescued by the police. The Roman government comes in and intervenes. Pull Paul away. Put him in a jail, put him in a prison. And here's what happens, y'all. God actually is working behind the scene to put this brother in protective custody. Number one, here's how he's protected. Number one, protected. Y'all gonna stay with me on this computer thing? No. Protected, from religious gatekeepers. Number one, protected from religious gatekeepers. The religious gatekeepers are those who have set themselves up to determine who's in and who's out. In this text, it would be the Sanhedrin Council. With every religion, there's always people who are determined who's in with God and who's out with God. These are the gatekeepers. We determine if you're close to God or if you're out and all that. And so the religious gatekeepers, he protects them from them because they're about to kill him. They're about to tear Paul apart. And what God does is he allows the Roman government to intervene and arrest him and put him in jail. Now, the thing you need to appreciate about this, number one, is this. Paul is in jail, but the means by which God is going to protect him is by putting him in this uncomfortable situation. Please appreciate what's happening here. It could let me give you the other scenario. If it would have went like this, Paul, we don't find anything wrong with you, so what we're going to do is clear you the charges, and we're going to let you walk out of here. You already have some haters sitting in the shadows, and they don't care nothing about the law. Paul, we're going to take him out. So if Paul would have been cleared of the charges and walked out there, can I tell you what would have happened when he wouldn't even made it around the block? Somebody was going to stab him. Later on in the text, he got 40 people who going to say, we ain't going to eat or drink until Paul is dead. They don't care nothing about no law. Paul is messing up the status quo. This gospel is getting in the way of our power. So if Paul would have just left, you free to go. Now remember also that they were jumping on Paul before the police came. We talked about that last week. And they were going to kill Paul. The only reason they stopped beating him was because the police showed up. So now they let Paul out. What you think going to happen? I wish I had a witness in here. So by God allowing Paul, cutting the court loose, allowing Paul to get arrested, he's in an uncomfortable situation, but it's actually the jail that's protecting him. Ain't there something? Ain't there something? I told you God got you in protective custody. But I did not tell you, number one, protective custody doesn't mean that you ain't never going to die, nothing bad going to happen to you. Number two, protective custody doesn't mean that God going to put you somewhere where you always comfortable. So don't go right out here, hallelujah, putting on Facebook, talking about something, I'm in protective custody, God going to give me the car I want, God going to give me the house, I'm going to be, hi-ya, touch somebody and say favor. Now, let me tell you what favor is. For Paul, favor means being in jail. And here he is in jail, but God is using this uncomfortable situation, this unfavorable situation, in order to protect him. So I'm holding you. I'm putting you where I need you to be. Isn't it something how God does that? Isn't it something how God will put me in a situation, and then I'll get mad at him because I'm trying to move out. And behind the scene, God is saying, you just don't know what's around the corner. And you think I'm doing you a bad deal, but where you are, I got you exactly where I need. And why you trying to fight me? You don't want what's behind door number two, so you better. It was an artist who wrote back like no one. He said, God blocked it. He wouldn't let it be so. Can I tell you sometimes, I thank God for the doors that he opens. But you better learn how to thank him for the doors also that he closes. And sometimes I'm mad because how God won't let me get to where I want to get. He said, you don't understand. I got you here because I'm blocking you from some stuff because I got you in protective custody. And where I have you is going to ultimately get you to the purpose for which I have for you. Paul, and notice the gatekeeper situation. The Sanhedrin thinks that they think that they're the ones who determine who get in with God. They're the ones who determine who's outside of God. But notice where God, when God shows up, look at verse 11. When God shows up, where does he show up? Who does he approve of? God don't show up with the gatekeepers. God don't show up at the Sanhedrin council and approve of them. God doesn't show up at the temple and approve of them. God don't show up in the synagogue and approve of the gatekeepers. When God shows up, he shows up in a jail cell next to Paul saying, you know what? Everybody else may be against you. But if I'm with you, I wish I had a witness in there. I determine who's in and who's out. Because if you got the resurrected Christ, if you got Jesus, you got everything that you need. Somebody said that me and God make a majority. That's a lie.
God is the majority all by him lonesome. I wish I had a witness here. Somebody said, God said it. I believe it. And that settles it. That's a lie. God said it. That settles it. Whether you believe it or not. Y'all ain't hear what I'm saying. So if I want to be right, I need to get on with him because he's the one that determines. You ain't hearing me this morning. Who's in and who's out. So he protects from religious gatekeepers. Now, please, when he comes to Paul, I want to read this again. The following night, verse 11, the Lord stood by him and said, take courage, for as you have testified to the facts about me in Jerusalem, you must testify also in Rome. Remember the takeaway here. Paul, I got you here for a purpose. My protection over you is connected to my purpose for you. Protective custody does not mean the bad things can't happen. It don't mean that you can't die. It don't mean you can't check out of here. What it means is you ain't going nowhere until God gets out of you what he puts in you. Connect the protection to the purpose. A lot of us celebrate, oh, I got out of prison. Oh, I got out of jail. Oh, I got out of hospital. Oh, God got me here one more day. That's good, but please understand. In God's perspective for a Christian, it's actually better to be with him than to be here. To be absent in the body is to be present with the Lord. I wish I had a witness in a Baptist church on Sunday. We always tripping about folks dying and all that, but that's because we miss them, and there ought to be some grief there. But understand, in God's perspective, if you save, it's better over there. Matter of fact, if I was a gambling man, if you was able to talk to any of those folks that are saved and left and ask them, I miss you, will you come on back? They'll look at you like you crazy. Say, no, I ain't coming back here. But you can't come over here because it's better over here. So God ain't just keeping you here because this is the ideal place. He keeps you here. He protects you because you got a purpose here. Paul, I got you going to Rome. I got a purpose for you. And matter of fact, later on when God is through with him, he's going to allow that same government that's protecting him to take him out. Because the protective custody is for your purpose. So instead of shouting about I got another day, or just satisfied that I ain't sick, or satisfied that I'm at the hospital, you need to ask the next question. Since he got me here and it's for a purpose, how can I use the time that I got accomplishing what he has for me? I'm protected for a purpose. Y'all hear what I'm trying to tell you? You can't just allow yourself to be on survival mode. I'm just living. You can't allow yourself just to be on achiever mode. I'm going to get a car. I'm going to get a house. I'm going to get another this. We based on kingdom of God values, which means we deny ourselves. We lose ourselves and ironically find ourselves in Jesus Christ and the purpose he has for our lives. Y'all hear what I'm trying to tell you? Yeah. God ain't going to let you out of here until, that's why you're here. There's a drug addict. God got folk lined up for you. He got some people, just like he had for Rome, for Paul in Rome. He got some folks here that he needs you to talk to. There's some drug addicts that God got it lined up for you, that you need to tell them that you can't be set free. Y'all, for real? You think God just got you here so you can go to church on Sunday? That's a pretty bad deal. Some of you got some coworkers. God got some coworkers lined up for you that have made a God out of their job. And God got you there to tell them the gospel about there's much more to life than where you working. Your career is what you paid for. Your calling is what you made for. God got somebody lined up for you. He got you in protective custody. Some of you got family and friends who want to confide in you with their deepest, darkest secrets. They ain't got nobody to tell this stuff to. But God got them lined. I said they ain't got nobody else to tell them to. Why y'all come quick? Like, don't tell it to me. I don't want to know. Look, come on now. I said he got it lined up for you. It's purpose, y'all. He got these folks lined up for you. Going to tell you their deepest, darkest secrets so that not you can go out and get on the phone and tell the whole world. He's letting you know that because they need to know, hey, I got some secrets too. I got some dark closets too. But the same God who forgave me through Jesus Christ can forgive you of your past and give you a new beginning. He got folks lined up for you. And you ain't checking out of here until he gets out of you. There's some child who's messed up God got them lined up for you. Not so you can say, I don't understand these children today, but to let them know I fully understand, because I was a fool just like you. And if God is still working on me and can change me, he can do the same thing for you. He got them lined up, y'all. He got them lined up. He got folk who have lost hope and are asking, why should I live another day? And he got them lined up for you to say the resurrection, because he lives. I can face tomorrow. You're here under protective custody, but your protection, you're under protection in order for you to fulfill your purpose. Y'all feeling that? Are you feeling that? It's not enough to just exist. There is a difference between merely existing and truly living. It was Corrie ten Boom who said that life is not valued merely by its duration, but by its donation. That is, ain't about how long you live, but how much you contribute while you're here. Everybody say existence. Everybody say living. Now, not only does he protect him from the religious gatekeepers, but that he's also protected from the ruthless gangsters. Did y'all see him? Verse 16 and 17. Let me read them. Matter of fact, let me read up before I go there. Verse 12. Look at verse 12. When it was day, the Jews made a plot and bound themselves by an oath to neither to eat or drink till they had killed Paul. Now this ain't no law here. This ain't no court. This ain't no legal proceedings. This is some stuff behind the door. This is gangster stuff. I do have a witness. You're going to kill somebody. I ain't going to eat and I ain't going to drink. And matter of fact, putting themselves under the curse saying, may God curse me if I don't fulfill this vow. That's what's going on. There were more than 40 who made this conspiracy. But let me, what's going on? And to appreciate this, what's happening, they're going to say, look, and by the way, if you keep on reading, the street thugs are going to collaborate with the political thugs. That is, these street thugs are going to kill Paul. They're going to go to the chief priest, the political thug, and say, look, y'all did know that street thugs sometimes get in bed with political thugs. Y'all do know that there's a connection sometimes with the government and the mafia. Oh, y'all just figured this out? It's been going on a long time. The political thugs and the street thugs come together. And behind the scenes, they saying, look, if you help me out, I'm going to help you out, because this gospel that Paul is preaching is inconveniencing all of us. So I tell you what, let's do this. Let's come together. And look, you have them come to the court. Y'all make it like it's legal. When you get on CNN, it's going to be like y'all doing what y'all supposed to do. We're going to be sitting in the bushes. And while he's on his way, we're going to attack him. We're going to kill him. And then we're going to run all off somewhere and get away. And y'all can kind of blame it on some kind of thug, but y'all ain't going to press no charges. Now, what they're setting up here is what's called a kill zone. Let me explain that. There's a book entitled The Awful Grace of God that speaks of the assassination of Martin Luther King. And they go back through FBI documents and whatnot, and what they discovered is that even that Birmingham bombing with those four girls, y'all remember that? A lot of that was a means to an end, not merely just to kill folk or to destroy a black church, but that was the fourth bombing, actually, within a series of bombings. And the reason why, they were trying to do something that was big enough to get King's attention, that he would have to come down and make a statement or a speech. They wanted King to come down there. And what they conspired was, if we make it big enough, he'll come down here. And once he's down here, we're going to create a kill zone. And the kill zone is going to be on this side, that side. There's only so many ways he can go. And we're going to shoot him first. And if we don't shoot him, then we'll have a bomb there if we don't get to shoot him. It's what's called, everybody say, a kill zone. So that's what you got here in the text. You have a kill zone. We're going to get him from the jail to the court. We're going to be sitting down there. And once we get him into this zone, we're going to take him out. But in this text, it shows that God is not only in charge of the gatekeepers, but God is also in charge, in control of the gangsters. Look what happens, y'all. the text is going to say in verses 16 that there is a leak that exposes the plan of the street thugs and the political thugs. Look at your neighbor in the face and say, there's a leak. Look at somebody and say, thank God for the leak. Oh, I ain't meddling. But the text said, Charles, text says the leak. Look at verse 16. Now, the son, you got to appreciate this because you ain't never heard this guy before. You ain't never going to hear from him again. Come out of nowhere and we don't even know his name. But just in time, now the son of Paul's sister, we ain't even know Paul had a sister, heard, this is his nephew, of their ambush. So he went and entered the barracks, the jail, and told Paul. That's the leak right there. So some kind of way he heard about the conspiracy. He moves off and he goes to the jail. Read it. Paul called one of the centurions and said, take this young man. Notice Paul never tells him he's my nephew and never tells him that it's his name. Because you know, once you leak something out, they're going to attack you. Don't you just love this Bible? I said, as a leak, he said, take this young man to the tribune. The tribune is this guy named Lysias. We'll see him in verse 26. He's the ruler and the governor of this military cohort. And he says, take him in and let him know what's going on. Now, you do know this is a risk because in order for Paul to be protected, this military leader has to go along with this thing. And there's a chance that he'll turn on Paul and this guy be in trouble. So the guy goes, and you got to appreciate the risk. But what happens is the plan is intercepted. And here's the idea here. Notice what they try to do is their goal is to kill Paul. But what they do, ironically, is put a curse upon themselves. Remember, the text said that they made an oath. That is a curse. Not to eat or to drink until they kill Paul. Now, if they are to carry out their vow, because they never do kill Paul, then it's on them. So in trying to kill him, you have pronounced a curse upon your... Y'all hear what I'm trying to say? Now, in the Jewish law, there were ways to get out of the curse and all that. But you got to see the irony of the point is that even the plans that are done under the table, the plans that are done to take the church out, the boardrooms that are filled with folk who say, we're going to take you out, God can deal with that. He can provide a leak out of nowhere. I wish I had a witness in here. And he can turn it around. Now, sometimes he don't give the leak. Sometimes he does not expose it. But the point still remains that he's in control even of the gangsters, those who don't want to play by the rules. I wish I had a witness here. Oh, it was in the Philippines that I had a conversation with Mike. Tell you about how things turn around. Mike Foster, he's over that Word of Life complex. He told us about many things that God did to work it out. And one thing happened, they had a little few gangsters out there, and this man... it was a conversation about the security. When you come into the complex, there's security. Came out there, there's this, the chicken. And the chickens is a big deal out there. Not KFC. I mean, chickens. Chickens feel free to run. They ain't going to do it around us because they know we're going to eat them. So but the chickens feel free around there. So the chickens is a big deal. And this chicken kept on getting loose and come over to the complex. And then there was a dispute between the security people in Mike's complex and this chicken guy. And the guy comes and the security guy say, hey, man, you need to take care of your chicken. You need to do this. The guy was drunk and happened to be part of a gang and a drug dealer. So he took offense to it, took it where it really didn't need to go. And now he's mad and all that stuff. He brings his friends back. Oh, yeah, such and such. Y'all think that. I tell you what, I'm coming out here and I'm gonna mess up all y'all. I'm going to take all y'all out. So now he wants to kill the security guard. He also wants to kill Mike Foster. So sometime between that time and when he goes back to the house, he's convicted that he's wrong. He's like, man, I'm doing this over a chicken and whatnot. So he comes back to the complex. And instead of trying to kill Mike, God had turned the man's heart. He comes to apologize. He says, sir, I'm sorry. It wasn't that big of a deal. Mike said, hey, ain't no problem, man. We love you, this, that, and the other. And it gave Mike the opportunity to present the gospel to the guy. Can I tell you what happened? Here's a guy who wanted to kill him, and he leaves getting saved. Ain't through with the story. He leaves after he's saved, and now he said, look, when can I come back? He said, you can get a Bible from here. We got Bible study here. Come on over here. We'll teach you about the word, disciple, and all that. So he's excited about his newfound faith. He is about to drop his drug stuff, but the drug people say, oh, no, dog, you only one way you can get out of this, and it's dead. So what happens is they find out about him apologizing, getting saved, and they kill him before he can get back. I ain't through with the story. The man who got killed had a son. The son got mad because he thought that Mike killed his daddy. Now the son say, I'm going to kill Mike because he killed my daddy. He, you know how folks get the facts wrong. As a matter of fact, Mike said, man, it was so bad. I'm walking down the street and they calling me Gangster Mike. And he said, when I'm walking down the street, everybody goes to the other side of the sidewalk like I'm a murderer. And the guy's like, I'm going to take you out. Here's the son now going to kill him. Then the son finds out later, he said, the police said, man, they ain't kill your daddy. Mike didn't kill your daddy. He did. And he feels bad about what he does. He goes up to the complex. Say, sir, I was going to kill you. I'm sorry, such and such. Mike said, no problem. That's all right, man. I didn't kill your daddy. We here for you. We know you grieving the loss of your daddy. Led the son to Jesus Christ. And now that the son has accepted Christ, he now goes to, signs up for the Bible Institute. This guy becomes a missionary and even until this day is contributing to this Word of Life complex. Here's a daddy wanting to kill, came back, got saved. Here's a son wanting to kill him, came back. All I'm trying to tell you is God got control of the gangster. And what you plan to do really don't matter because God's purposes always overrule the plans of man. Y'all ain't hear what I'm trying to tell you. I said, y'all ain't hearing what I'm trying to tell you. You'll hear it in just a minute. Finally, we're not only protected from, yes, the religious gatekeepers. We're not only protected, yes, from the ruthless gangsters, those that don't want to play by the rules. But finally, we are also protected from the ruling government. Look at verse 22. After the Roman government hears about the leak and find out about the ambush, what happens is they decide, say, uh-oh, we better get this dude out of here because he's about to get assassinated. So now the Roman government, Lysias is over the Roman government, who's supposed to be incarcerating Paul, is now going to give Paul protection. Let's read it. Verse 22. So the tribune dismissed the young man, charging him, don't tell anybody what you told me. Then he called two of the centurions and said, get ready 200 soldiers with 70 horsemen and 200 spearmen and to go as far as Caesarea at the third hour. That's 9 o'clock at night. And also provide mounts for Paul to ride so we can bring him safely to the governor, Felix. Here's the guy. Here's the Roman government. By the way, this is the same government that crucified Jesus. And this same government who is over the ruling world, this government who has Paul incarcerated, now is turning around and going to provide not only protection for Paul, but going to turn around and be Paul's armor bearers. Matter of fact, if you calculate the soldiers, Paul is now going to be escorted out of town with 470 armor bearers. I wish I had a witness here. Of those who are supposed to incarcerate him, God has now seized them and made him his agents. Can I tell you? And here's the thing. It ain't like Claudius got something from God. Claudius is not doing this because of freedom of religion. Claudius is not doing this because Paul got a 501c3. Claudius is not giving him protection because he's a Christian or he feels something for Christianity. Claudius is not giving him protection because Christians have rights. Can I tell you why Claudius is doing this? In Claudius' mind, he could care less whether Jesus got up or not. He's the indifferent kind. I don't care nothing. I don't even know what y'all fussing about. But Claudius is saying he's doing it for his own self-interest. The idea is, hey, I can't have no Roman citizen assassinated on my watch. So he ain't doing it because he loves Jesus. He doing it because he want to keep his job. But can I tell you how even God can use folk who ain't heard a word from God, ain't studying God, don't care nothing about God? God can even turn those 470 soldiers. God uses to protect Paul. He even has even the government in his hand. What am I trying to tell you? This is what I'm trying to tell you. We're worried about, I need to hear this message about God being in control, even over a government, in a time when we're worrying about who's sitting in the White House. I need to hear that God is in control in a time where I'm wondering about a Russian conspiracy. I need to hear that God is in control of the government in a time when we're worried about what that fool over in North Korea is going to do. I need to hear that God is in control in a time when I'm worried about ISIS. The government, the media, and it's not the media's fault. They're just putting out what's going on. They're just putting out the facts. But what the effect that it's having on the people of God is, oh, what's going to happen if this guy's in the White House? What's going to happen because of the collaboration between Russia? Let me go on and tell you. I don't know. But however it goes, whether they try to take us out or whether they try to be our friend, can I tell you how it's going to turn out? It's all going to be in the hands of God. And at the end of the day, he's even going to use his enemies to accomplish his purpose. So y'all can get off this stuff about they doing this and they doing that. Because at the end of the day, God is going to be in control. And just like he used 470 soldiers who had nothing to do with him, he can use whoever, whenever, wherever, because the purposes of God always overrule. We having the wrong conversation. We talking more about what governments are doing than what God is doing. And as the people of God, we ought to always remind folk that this stuff is in God's hands. This ain't just starting acts. You do remember Pharaoh in Egypt. They thought they were in control. But God was using them. Matter of fact, Paul gonna say, Pharaoh, it's for this purpose that I have raised you up, that I can show my power. God in control of governments. Babylon thought they were in control. But we find out that it wasn't about Babylon. God was using Babylon as a means to judge his own people. Persia thought that they were in control. But Persia wasn't in control. God was just using Cyrus to bring his people back like he promised. And he said, oh, by the way, Persia, why I got you here, why don't you go on and build and invent a cross? Because I'm going to need a cross later for the Romans who are going to come in and take over society and put my son on a cross. Rome thought they were in control, but God is even going to use Rome to get Jesus born in Bethlehem and to be crucified on the cross. And even in the midst of Jesus' trial, did not God show that he's in control of governments? I said, did he not show, even at the cross, that he's in control of government? Now, y'all don't see. Y'all forgot the story. Y'all waiting for Easter to shout about it. But let me tell you something. On Easter, we're going to shout about when he was on the cross and when he got up. But can I tell you something that happened before the cross? And can I tell you what happened after the cross? You had a government official who confirmed the credentials of Christ before the cross. And you had a government official who confirmed the credentials of Christ after Jesus died. Before Jesus died, it was Pilate. I wish I had a witness in here who had no stake whatsoever. Said, I find no. That was the government. That God put it in the government's mouth to give credence to what Jesus was doing. But not only before the cross, but after he died. After we hear the last word from Jesus, the last word we hear is from a Roman centurion who said, surely this must be the Son of God, because when God is in control, God's purposes always overrule the plans of man. It don't matter what folk got all kind of plans and whatnot, and they got their own agenda, but God is using them and they don't even know what's happening. Sister Barbara Jackson, Nick Nicole, Sister Barbara Jackson over there. That ministry you over scholarship had a problem one time. We was going to do that thing to give money to the kids. We had a problem with funds, trying to figure out how we was going to get it to them and all that. I'm sitting down having a meeting with her, and this is the amount of money that we need. And we're trying to put our heads together about how we're going to get this money for the kids for scholarship. I don't know. And I'm, the whole time, I'm looking at my watch because I got a meeting that I got to go to with the man who, Mr. Dunn, his Mr. Red, over Dunn. We got to meet. This is my first time meeting with him. And my goal is to present the gospel to him. Now, my goal is, have you heard of a friend named Jesus? Matter of fact, I wrote him a letter one time. Hey, you heard of my friend named Jesus? That's all I want from Mr. Dunn, and to establish a relationship. Can we come into your complex and be able to talk to folk about Jesus? That's what I want. That's what I want, Nicole. So what happened is, I said, Jackson, we got to wrap this meeting up. I don't know how we going to get this money. We pray. I don't know what we going to do. But we'll put our heads together and come up with something. God said, you put your head together. Ha, ha, ha. So I leave there and rush to the meeting with Mr. Dunn. And Mr. Red. And as I'm sitting there talking to him, at the end of the meeting, I asked him something. You know how I say, if you die tonight, stand for God, what would your answer be? All that. Kind of wanted to see where he was. And he kind of just kind of shoved it off like a joke or whatever. And that's when I wrote my letter later. But my goal is to preach the gospel. My goal is to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ. But then at the end of the meeting, he said, sir, Reverend, it's just something I just want to give you guys. Appreciate what you guys are doing. And just want to give you that. Open up. It was a check for the exact amount. Now play something. Just play something. I ain't gonna hook. Just play something. Play something. It was for the exact amount that we need. Now here, Mr. Dunn, Mr. Red ain't studying Jesus. When I talked about the gospel, he was like, ha ha ha. Can I tell you why he gave me the money? He gave the money like reason when some of y'all give money. Tax write off. Y'all hear what I'm trying to tell you? He ain't studying whatever we doing over here. We got two different purposes, but can I tell you that the purposes of God always overrule the plans of man? Because God is in control. Song you sing by the choir, say, all in his hand. I put it all in his hand. All of my burdens, all of my problems, unanswered questions. Look at somebody and say, I put it all. Look at somebody and say, yes, I put it all. I put it all in his hand. Say yes. Say yes. You ain't got to worry because it's in his hand. Ah, yeah. Come on and sing. I had to get that out of me.